And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another off-season edition of Football and Grits. Alabama and Tennessee, they tend to get tangled pretty often. And last week, they got tangled again. Henry To'oto'o going from Tennessee to Alabama. Tennessee knew he was gone for the most part for quite some time. But you got to be rooting for him to not make a return trip to the schedule. Ohio State in the mix there late. Alabama, Florida in the mix there. Wasn't sure if he's going to stay on the West Coast, but he's going to Alabama, which means Tennessee is going to see him again. It's been rumored for a while, on again, off again, all amid kind of a background of relative silence from the To'oto'o end. We had his dad talk to a website a while back and, you know, mentioned that they didn't want to make the same mistake they made the first time, which if you read between the lines, you know, certainly Tennessee fans didn't take to that. But there's been a lot of rumor, a lot of uncertainty, but that uncertainty is gone now. What is certain is that Alabama has a new inside linebacker. He's pretty good. We'll talk about that later. I'm joined by Aaron Suttles, who I'm sure you've heard. If you're a longtime Football and Grits listener, he covers Alabama for us. Aaron, what's your understanding of kind of how this came together?
Well, when he went into the portal, as you mentioned, it was, you know, because Alabama finished sort of runner up for his services in his initial recruitment when Jeremy Pruitt had left Alabama and did a good job recruiting the family. So when he went into the portal, it was sort of, a lot of people were like, well, Alabama's probably in play here. And then it dragged on, and the longer it dragged on, I just kept hearing, well, if Alabama's going to take him, not that they need like some handshake, wink, wink agreement from the SEC, but they would have to have some sort of understanding or, you know, basically they didn't want to waste a player for a year. You know, they didn't want to take a transfer player if he wasn't going to be eligible this year because they got number issues. I mean, they're going to have to do some work to get down to that 85. You know, once all those the other freshmen report at the end of the month. So the longer it dragged on, the last I had checked on it probably a week and a half ago, I Alabama was still in it, but I just heard that their interest was waning, and that obviously proved not to be the case. But my first thought is I would expect him to be eligible this fall. And you know, I think that's if my understanding is that Alabama wouldn't have wasted, but Alabama wouldn't have used a scholarship on a player that would not have been eligible this year.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth spending that much time talking about some of the transfer stuff. I mean, we've seen most other leagues at the Power 5 level and the lower levels basically say they're not going to, restrict transfers within the conference as the national rule of immediate eligibility comes aboard. The conferences have to pass their own legislation. There's so much, motivation for the SEC to pass that. It feels like a matter of time. I would be shocked if that's the case. But, I think ultimately, we wrote about this, but losing Tosh Lapoy the first time around – basically flipped him to Tennessee. Tennessee had Kevin Simon. The De La Salle connection was hugely important for him. Ohio State, I thought, made a ton of sense. They lost three linebackers. You knew he was going to be able to get on the field. He's a little more suited to the Big Ten style of play. He's struggled in pass coverage. He's got to grow there. When you look at that battle between Alabama and Ohio State, from what you understand, why do you feel like he tipped to sticking around the SEC?
I think he was more comfortable there. The relationships that he had in the initial recruitment, and Ohio State puts a lot of kids in the league, but I mean, Alabama's just had the biggest infomercial you could ever have a couple weeks ago with the NFL draft, with all those first rounders. And I think that you know, you see these kids want to go to the next level and they want to be developed. And that's, you can certainly do that right at Ohio State. I just think it came down to relationships, the relationships he had at Alabama. You know, he met some people going through the recruitment process that are still on the team, you know, all of that, the family's comfortability with Alabama. And I think that's probably what won out in the end.
Yeah, you know, those relationships are really big for him and his family. I think, you know, I think when you look at it, I agree with you. I think that's basically just knowing how he operates and how his family operates, how important that is. You know, from the Tennessee perspective, it's sort of like a 1-2 punch, because for a long time, I think Tennessee fans have become resigned to he's not coming back. You know, when he went home for the holidays, Jeremy Pruitt's still employed, but he didn't come back. When everybody else was reporting, he was still doing classes online, stuck in California. And at that point, Tennessee fans are kind of like, well, I don't like the sound of that. Jerry Pruitt's there. The rest of the team is there getting ready for offseason workouts. He's not there. Then Jerry Pruitt gets fired. Then you're like, well, all right. Like, you kind of expect it if you're a Tennessee fan. And then, of course, you hire Josh Heupel. He's still not coming back from California. It's still silence. And then he enters the transfer portal, and then you're sort of wondering, but he's not shutting the door, all these things. But Tennessee fans were – I don't think there was very many people, anyone who's paying attention, or even those who weren't really paying attention because it's been talked about for so long, thought he could come back. But I think, like you mentioned, when it wasn't Alabama for so long, when there was no official announcement, I think Tennessee fans were like, maybe we don't have to deal with this guy again, you know, as your permanent crossover opponent, or, you know, Florida was in the mix there a little bit. But it's one, it's having to deal with him in that he's going to, you know, come and beat you next year. That game's in Tuscaloosa, which I think helps a little bit. But this is just a new experience for Tennessee fans, in that you have a guy who, you know, last year he beat out Trey Smith for our fan survey of their favorite player on the roster. And Trey Smith is one of the most beloved guys ever, guy that put a lot on the line for Tennessee. Part of that's being an offensive lineman, but Henry Toto beat him out as their favorite player on the roster. He had a rough 2020 season, you know, lost some weight, wanted to get a little bit faster. Wasn't as sure of a tackler, but he's still their best defensive player. He is, or was, I should say. And so it's one thing to lose that guy. It's another thing to lose that guy to a rival. And it's another thing to lose that guy. And no Tennessee fan can say, well, you know, he shut us down, but you know what? We're going to come beat him come fall. Like, that's not going to happen. It's just like a bracing for impact. It's like another punch in the face or somewhere lower that Tennessee fans have to deal with again, of just like, okay, not only did you just lose your best defensive player, a lot of fans' favorite player, but now you have to watch him wear the jersey and probably excel and probably do some great things at a place that has just kind of ground your nose into the dirt for the last decade plus. Most of those losses, pretty lopsided. And I feel for Tennessee fans, it's, you know, a bleak existence when you have to watch that. But when you look at his fit in Alabama, is it, you know, Dylan Moses is gone. Is it as simple as just plug and play? He goes in there and he's going to be that guy. He won a job in a really crowded room as a true freshman when there wasn't really an opportunity for him to get on the field. He just beat out pretty talented, more experienced guys. Is he Alabama's new starting linebacker the second he steps on campus?
It's hard to envision that he's not. And you go back to the comments that Nick Saban made during spring when this topic came about, you know, the transfer portal and players having that mobility. And he basically said, look, I don't think it's good for the game, but Alabama's going to benefit for this. You know, I don't see a ton of great players that play for us leaving, but we're going to be able to add some players. And on the tail end of that, he said, you know, if it's got to make sense for us, that the player that we take has got to be better than the other players at his position. So based on Nick Saban's own words, you sort of automatically, the moment that news comes out, you put Henry T in right next to Christian Harris. And now you start looking at Alabama's linebacker situation, which for a couple years ago was pretty brutal relative to what Alabama's had over the you know, last 15 years and the play they've gotten, you start looking at Christian Harris, Henry To'o, Will Anderson, and Christopher Allen, and suddenly you got one of the, I mean, inside and outside, maybe the best linebacker room in the country. So he's not going to be handed the job, but the fact that Nick Saban said that about his philosophy on bringing in transfers leads me to believe they think he's better than anybody else they have there right now.
Yeah, I think there's not – it's not the reasonable Tennessee fans, I think, that were, oh, you know, he struggled in coverage last year, he's overrated, all this other stuff. You know, I think they'll be watching closely to see what that development, what that production looks like.
I had people on my Alabama Twitter mentions convinced this guy was trying to convince me this guy was a scrub.
Yeah, well,
he can't play. He's horrible.
He struggled in pass coverage last year, and teams really attacked that. But his read and react is good. I would say elite. Football IQ is off the charts. The dude works really hard. Causation is a complicated concept, right? But last year, Brian Niedermeyer was a first-year linebackers coach. He'd never coached linebackers at the college level. And Henry To'o struggled. Are those two things, you know, cause? I'm not sure. But ultimately, he probably slightly regressed last year in a handful of ways. And teams were really attacking him in pass coverage. Is he, you know, the perfect player, a surefire first-round pick? No, maybe he can play his way into there, but just based on skills alone, the fact that he has basically zero red flags, I mean, he does everything right, really good kid, really smart kid. You know, if he is fine at Alabama, I mean, he's probably a day two pick at worst. After 1 year, we'll see if he sticks around for year two. It seems like the conventional wisdom is it's a one-year deal. At Alabama, I can't say I'd be floored if he stuck around for a second year. We'll see. It'll depend on how this year goes. He's not a scrub. Like, can he improve a lot? Did he probably regress last year? Yeah, I'd say both those things are probably true. I would say that sometimes the larger structure. What'd you say?
Was the weight loss on purpose? Because 215 yes. seems a little light inside.
He wanted to be able to get sideline to sideline faster. It was an emphasis for him. How much of that is changing game? How much of that is a request from the staff? It's hard to know. I think maybe he sees the game changing and thought that maybe at the NFL level, if he's a little bit lighter, you know, he can be more marketable. He got lighter. I don't know that he got that much faster. Just watching him, he didn't look a ton faster. It's not like he looked like all of a sudden he was a safety. He bounced off people a little bit more last year. But I just think the developmental structure of Alabama is so proven and so tried and true, despite the constant turnover of coaches, that it's hard to believe he's not going to get better coaching there. Tennessee last year was kind of a mess in a lot of ways. And I have a hard time believing he's not going to benefit at Alabama. And that's going to be a hard pill to swallow for Tennessee fans, but I think any Tennessee fan can say, you know, last year was probably not the ideal atmosphere for players to operate. And, you know, I'm sure some of that regression, I mean, I don't think you can totally overlook the COVID stuff where a lot of guys were out, and Tennessee didn't really get a spring. They didn't really get a preseason camp. And that's where a lot of development happens. A lot of that's during the season too, but I think some of that is true as well. When you have a first year position coach and you don't get a ton of work with them, that's a factor. It just is. And you know, I if I'm a betting man, I'm betting on Henry To'o to have a great career at Alabama, however long that is. If it's 1 year, I just think, again, the football IQ is off the charts, the toughness is off the charts. I mean, he dislocated his knee as a freshman and just like kind of kept playing. He was like, we'll pop back in and keep playing. And then he had a brace on the rest of the year, and he was still really, really good in 19. Just all of the intangibles that you'd want out of a linebacker, he has. And then you put him into that Alabama, you know, ecosystem. And, you know, if he's not hearing his name called pretty early in the draft, very soon I'll be surprised.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, looking at the larger structure of Alabama, you know, Nick Saban kind of warned people not long ago that they'd lose some good players, but they'd pick up some great players too. Henry To'oto'o, not the only one. Jameson Williams also coming to Alabama. Now, Aaron, I know Alabama, they've had a rough recent history with receivers. It's been a long time since they've had a good one. But why in the world would Jameson Williams want to come to Alabama as a receiver? That doesn't make
right?
sense.
Right. I can't imagine those four first round picks in the last two NFL drafts.
It's odd. His.
You know, I'm curious to see what Bill O'Brien, what kind of offense he runs, because under mm-hmm. Sarkisian, those receivers just flourished. And even under Mike Locksley, they flourished. But especially the last 2 years, they were just so creative. And they had an offensive line that allowed them to take some you know, some routes and combo routes that if you don't have a great offensive line, you're not going to be able to run some of the routes that they ran. But, you know, you look at what Nick Saban said during the spring, and, you know, John Mechie was out of spring. So it was a wide receiver room that suddenly without – I mean, the top guy in terms of production that was available for spring was Slade Bolden, and he's really just a slot guy. Caught his first touchdown pass ever in the national championship game against Ohio State. So it's a room that looks completely different than it did 2 years ago, than it did last year. And Nick Saban, even talking about John Mechie, said, you know, he likes speed. You know, speed kills is what Nick Saban said. And Jameson Williams, if you look at what he has in abundance, it's speed. And a lot of people looked at it and said, well, if you weren't going to get on the field at Ohio State, how are you going to get on the field at Alabama? Well, you get on the field because Alabama just lost four first round draft picks. And there are a lot of talented guys. In fact, the 2021 class they just signed, Alabama's got four of the top nine receivers in the country coming in. And we saw one of those guys on A-Day and he looked incredible, Jai Hall, but they're unproven. They haven't caught a pass in college. So I think you look at the speed that he brings, that how he can take the top off of defense. That's how he fits in there. Obviously the allure of Alabama and them featuring the receiver all of a sudden. You know, for a long time, Alabama didn't feature a receiver. It was a lot of play action passes and power running game. And now it's they're just throwing the ball all over the place, and a receiver can really make a name for himself and market himself that way. So Nick Saban said it. You said it, David. I mean, he knew what was coming, and he knows that for, you know, Alabama's going to lose great players, right? You know, there's just not enough guys you can get on the field at once. So great players they recruit are going to leave. Brandon Turnage is a guy that just entered the portal for Alabama last week. Great player. There's just guys in front of him that are going to play. So, you know, Tennessee actually benefited from that, you know, several years ago when a guy like Alvin Kamara couldn't get on the field because they had Derrick Henry in front of him and TJ Yeldon in front of him. So he transfers out, goes to JC, and then we know what he did at Tennessee and obviously what he's doing in the pro ranks. So you're going to have some players like that are going to have great careers. But most of the guys that transfer, you really almost never hear from them again. And then now Alabama is just going to cherry pick the guys they want that are already starters at other places, that have already made a name for themselves, that already developed themselves, and they're going to bring them in. So Alabama may have a hole in the offseason to start. That same hole may not exist by the time fall camp rolls around because they can, you know, they can supplement their roster through the transfer portal. It's I think it's good for players to have that mobility, to have the ability to go somewhere else where they will be able to play. But I don't think it's going to bring parity to the game at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to differentiate. You know, the point of the transfer rule is not to undercut Alabama's dominance and install parity to a sport that, again, it's basically orbiting around 3 to 5 teams. You know, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and then Oklahoma gets in there. Notre Dame kind of gets in there. Beyond them, I mean, those are the teams that are living in the playoff. So in some ways, expanding the playoff is about, hey, let's try to get some parity because we're seeing some recruiting side effects of that, in that it's creating this gap that is not good for the sport. But the transfer rule is not about that. The transfer rule is about doing what's right, giving players more autonomy, more agency, and the coaches can complain all they want, but it's the right thing to do. But you know, I'm starting to wonder if they should replace the national championship trophy with just a laser cut image of the Nick Saban sheepish grin, because he just lords over the entire sport, and that's, you know, every rule that is changed ends up, it seems like it makes Alabama better. Yeah. And this was going to happen. I didn't disagree with Nick Saban when he said this. It seems like, you know, this was probably where it was always going to go. But what do you make of this, that every time college football shifts, Alabama seems to only be benefited by it?
He's the most adaptable coach maybe in the history of the game. Think about this, and I always say this, adaptability is a great skill set that people who have had a ton of success don't often have that ability, because once you've achieved at the highest level, you become somewhat reliant on how you got there, because you've probably spent a lot of time building your program, your philosophy. And so, you know, through trial and error, you've come up with a system, a philosophy, whatever you want to prescribe it to, and it works for you. And then think about how scary it could be to completely go away from that, because the rules of the game have changed or the game is changing. Nick Saban's done it, you know, a lot. Nick Saban came to Alabama and he was the best recruiter in the country. And he did it because he outworked everybody. And then they came up and said, oh, you know what? You're not allowed out on the road in spring anymore. So we're gonna take that away from you. Well, then he just hired great assistant coaches to go do it for him. And then he questioned, you know, do we want offensive linemen allowed 3 yards downfield, you know, blocking? And so you don't know if it's a pass or a run. Is this where we want the game to go? And then he said, okay. And so he adapted his entire program to that. I mean, I'm talking about the sizes of the linebackers, the sizes of the defensive linemen, everything, the type of player that they brought in. I mean, think about the receivers Alabama's had since they've gone spread. I mean, just think about the names that have been there in the production. And then they finally conquered the one thing that Nick Saban had never really had at Alabama, which was great quarterback play. I mean, they were all sort of described as game managers, right? And then
the caretaker.
And then he starts bringing in playmakers. And so it's all sort of come together. He's not going to sit still. And he's fine if you want to change it. But he knows in the end it's going to benefit him because of what he's built. And because at the end of the day, players want to go to the NFL. And Alabama's pumping them out at a rate that's incredible. And you can do so and be featured and play against the best competition in practice every day, within the SEC, and win national championships and go on and have a pro career. He's a guy that's never going to stand pat on. He never looks back. He's never complacent. It's the same guy that gets mad because he has to go to a press conference after a national championship win when he could be recruiting. That's just the way he's wired. He doesn't. It's almost like he didn't care about how or why they did things in the past and the success that they've had off of that. If you want to adapt, he's already got a plan for it. And, you know, most likely he's 2 or 3 steps ahead of everybody else, in that regard.
I think that's the simplest answer to the question of why can no one else duplicate this? Why can, you know, all the Saban tree, why do all those saplings dry up? They don't have that adaptability, and that there's not like a Saban secret sauce. It's just that he's better than everyone else, and he uses them, the people that he brings in his program, and brings the best out of them, and puts them in positions to succeed. And they just don't have that same ability. You know, obviously, you know, Jimbo Fisher, you can sort of, you know, figure out what you want to say about where he stands on the Saban tree. He's obviously been out and done his own thing. You know, Kirby Smart right now is the most promising branch of that tree, but it's still Saban's got the edge on those guys. And it is that adaptability. I think it's never been more clear than in this. You mentioned the big picture philosophical shift of Alabama was for so long just a joyless Death Star of destruction. And they're still that, but now they're a lot more fun to watch. They were not fun early on, and now they're pretty fun to watch. Devontae Smith was on the short list of most fun players to watch last year. Jalen Waddle, Jerry Jeudy, obviously Tua. Looking at the next generation, I'm pretty high on Bryce Young. We mentioned on the last show. I said, I don't really want to put undue pressure on the kid. I'm not saying that he has to do this, but I'm saying if I could go to Vegas and put a bet on Bryce Young to win the Heisman and or be the future number one pick, I would probably do that, maybe both. What is the internal view of Bryce Young at Alabama?
He's special in a way that, and again, I'm not trying to project the success he's going to have, but he shares a lot of characteristics with Tua. He's short. I mean, the guy's he's nowhere near 6 foot tall. And he processes quick. And I think his game is built on the RPO, which I'm really curious. I mean, I know Bill O'Brien had Deshaun Watson in Houston. I want to know how comfortable Bill O'Brien is with the RPO. Cause Sark was special. Sark was really, really good. And he probably didn't get enough credit for what Alabama was, but just because of all those weapons that he had to utilize, but he was really, really good. So you look at Bryce, I think he's got the ability, dual threat quarterback, makes quick decisions, is fairly accurate with the football. I think, but I kept hearing, and I know, and I'm not saying this to cast any shadow that Bryce Young is not going to be the starter, because he is. He's absolutely the starter day one, no questions asked. But this Jalen Milroe guy, they got out of Texas. I'm hearing a lot about him. He's a big guy. He's exceptional athlete, and he's got a big arm. Now, again, he didn't play in the spring game. He was held out for a medical issue. He's behind the eight ball. He's, in relative to Bryce Young because Bryce has got that year experience on him. But I just think, they're going to make things simple for Bryce this year because Alabama's offense is sort of built to be a running team. With that big offensive line they got, I know they lost some guys, but they've got plenty of talent offensive line. They'll roll those guys in there. And then this is the running backs they have. Their running back room is absurd in talent. They got Brian Robinson to come back for a fifth year. Jace McKellen, they beat out a couple years ago, Oklahoma out for him. Roydell Williams from here, same high school as Jameis Winston. Trey Sanders is a five-star guy if he comes back healthy after the car accident. And they, by the way, added a five-star running back from Texas in this year's running back class in Kamar Wheaton. They are loaded at running back. So I think – they are, at least early on in the season, they're going to lean on that running game and make things as simple and sort of roll the playbook out little by little for Bryce. But the marriage there between Bill O'Brien and Bryce Young is going to go a long way to, determining how far this offense can go. Talking to Christian Hackenberg, the former Penn State coach who played under Bill O'Brien, he said he puts a lot on the quarterback. And so, Bryce played some last year. I believe he played in 7 games, all of it mop-up duty. But he didn't have one snap in meaningful action. So that relationship there is going to be important on how this offense grows.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
How much do you think, you know, I always, you know, the five-star guys, you know, you sort of throw in at the end, oh, they add this five-star from Texas. When those guys go to a lot of places outside of that, you know, 4 to 5 team playoff orbit, there's this idea of like, it's on you to take us to the next level. You need to be our savior. You need to be the next guy the second you step on campus. How much of a draw do you think it is for those kind of guys to go to Alabama and not have to shoulder that? Do you think that's something that a lot of recruits think about in terms of, I can be great here, but I don't have to be all of these insane expectations day one? You know, Ty Simpson, same type of thing. If he came to Tennessee, I mean, it would be absurd because from day one, they'd expect him to look like Peyton Manning, and he's not going to have that at Alabama. How much of a factor do you think that is for guys to be able to go there and just develop and take their time? And when it's their time, I mean, so many guys have shined.
I think it's a personality trait that it comes down to, because you don't go to a school like Alabama unless you're hyper-competitive. And I think that's why Alabama recruits so well, honestly. I mean, schools try to negative recruit Alabama by saying you're never going to play there. And Nick Saban flips it and said, well, I wouldn't be recruiting you unless you could play, one. And two, you're going to be going up against a guy in practice every day that's going to be better than the guy you're going to play on Saturday most instances. So the competitiveness is there. But I think there is something to that, because you look at a guy like J.C. Latham, a five-star offensive tackle from IMG Academy there in Bradenton. And I've been told, like, hey, I'm fine if I play, but I'm also fine in sitting back and learning a year and developing a year and, you know, not waiting my turn, so to speak, but just building myself in my development. And there are certain guys like that, you know, and it also depends on the position, really, too. Like, there are certain positions it's really difficult to play as a true freshman. And, you know, offensive line's one of those, although Alabama's had some of those guys. Linebackers, a very difficult position to play in Nick Saban's secondary. But, you know, skill position players, like, you know, wide receiver, running back, they get on the field more quickly in places like Alabama. So I just think it depends on your personality trait. You know, a guy like Alvin Kamara was not content to sit. You know, he got hurt early in that first camp that put him behind, and he was never able to make that up, and it just sort of – the relationship just sort of deteriorated until he transferred. But I think there are some players that have that mindset, and there are some players that aren't happy unless they're playing, and there are some players that just sort of go by the process and develop at the rate they're going to, and those type players tend to have the most success.
Mm-hmm. I think as Alabama has ascended to, we're going to beat everybody by 40, and then they're going to play 3 or 4 games a year that they can lose. I think Alabama has crossed over into the UConn women's basketball territory of the conversation about being bad for the sport and all of these sorts of things. So as you look to big picture, I mean, the adaptability we've talked about, is there a recipe for Alabama to come back to earth that is not Nick Saban retiring? Is there something that you could see where you say, you know what, if this happens, Alabama might have trouble adjusting to that?
No, it's going to take that man retiring, I think.
I think I'm with you.
He just because, like, he's had multiple ADs. One AD he didn't particularly get along with, and he made it work. He gets anything he wants facilities-wise. There is one thing that might drive him out of the game that I've been watching closely, but he just seems to manage it. As well as you can manage anything. And that's the fact that his coaches leave very quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
the Nick Saban Rehabilitation Center. Yes.
50% of the staff is gone. A few years ago, it was 70% of his on the field coaches gone. And I always tell people that's a big number, but what you don't see are the roots underneath, the Brian Niedermeyers, the guys that weren't on the field, but were very key behind the scenes coaches. When they leave, take those guys too. So now you're constantly, your foundation of your program is constantly under attack because of opportunities for guys to go elsewhere. I mean, you look at Charles Huff. I mean, he's now a head coach at Marshall, and Alabama really wanted to keep him. Alabama really wanted to keep Carl Scott. He goes off to the Vikings. So when Nick Saban gets coaches that he likes, that recruit well, that develop, they don't stick around long because they get career opportunities. So I've always wondered, at what point are you just tired of having to interview people maybe you don't have a firsthand connection with, and maybe that just drives him away. But he's handled it. I mean, he added two NFL coaches to his staff this year. And I don't know how they're going to work out, Doug Marrone and Bill O'Brien, but the fact that he can go get two former NFL coaches and Bill O'Brien can talk about Tom Brady with Bryce Young and any quarterback.
It's a short list of guys who can do that. I think it's one.
I mean, it's incredible. So, no, to answer your question, it's going to take him just either something pissing him off to the point he leaves, which he's been so adaptable, I don't see that happening, or he just finally gets to the point where he wants a new challenge and maybe TV, but – He's like I talk about the players being hyper competitive. This guy's hyper competitive, and it's tough to walk away. Is he really gonna retire, no matter how much money they pay him, and go sit on the College Game Day set and wait 2 hours to do a 15-minute hit over two segments? Is that gonna satiate his competitive desire? I don't know, but it's gonna take him leaving because he's perfectly healthy. He's just everything they throw at him, he seems to have an answer for. And even when, some teams I've thought, they've lost too much, they're not going to compete this year, they're right back in the national championship game. So, maybe Kirby or Jimbo finally overtakes him and Nick Saban's ego can't handle it and he steps down. But that hasn't proven to be true yet and doesn't look like it's going to be true anytime soon.
Well, listen, I don't want to overstep my bounds. And I don't want to go beyond what we should go beyond, but I want to make an offer on this podcast. And I want to say that Nick Saban, if you really want to host, well, not host, I'll host. You can co-host an SEC football podcast. The spot's open. Football and Grits. We may have to run some paperwork. We may have to move some things around. Again, you can't have lead host duties. I will do that. He can be the co-host. We will do that. We'll talk about it. We'll work out the details. But if Nick Saban wants to co-host this podcast, that option is open for him.
That's probably closer right now than it was a couple of years ago because he has now experience with Zoom, right? I mean, he's had to do press conferences by that, and I'm sure he's got people behind the scenes with it because he's not really known as a technology person. Doesn't have a Twitter, but. Maybe the fact that he's a little more comfortable with doing these virtual talks, we have a better chance of landing them now than we did last year.
Well, I think it's everyone's dream to run an SEC podcast. I'm sure that it's his as well. And we want to make that come true for him. And if in the process we fix college football, that's fine too. But ultimately it's about making Nick Saban's dreams come true. And that is my goal. And so with that, we'll close the show with a job offer. Nick Saban, come co-host Football and Grits. Come be my sidekick. Let's do this thing. That will do it for this offseason edition of Football and Grits. I am David Ubben, joined by Aaron Suttles. It's going to be an interesting fall. It's going to be an interesting year. Aaron, we were talking about this on the last show. I'm just glad that we don't have to wonder or have any conversation about whether or not there's going to be a season. There's going to be football. And I forgot how sweet that sounds in May. Yeah. So
thank goodness.
I'm looking forward to the fall. Thank you for listening. I'm sure you're looking forward to it too. We'll see you then. We'll see you very soon. Thanks for listening.